I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway. Putin's war against Ukraine is changing the lives of Russians. Russian authorities have arrested and detained thousands of Russians who have openly protested the invasion. And many Russian Americans and Russian immigrants living in the U.S. stand in solidarity with Ukraine and against Putin's aggression.
My name is Anton Svatsky. I'm the managing partner of a Russian-American gallery that has spaces in Moscow and in New York.
Svatsky was born in the Soviet Union in 1991 and emigrated to the U.S. in 2002, seeking asylum from anti-Semitic persecution in Moscow. His Fragment Gallery worked with marginalized artists in Russia and Eastern Europe to amplify their visibility and facilitate conversation with the West. Like nearly everyone, Svatsky was surprised when Putin invaded Ukraine.
You know, nobody really believed that he would do it until he did it. I mean, we instantly just, everybody at the gallery, to the danger of their own safety, just denounced it immediately and started organizing to support Ukraine and to support the Ukrainian front. I mean, there's nothing else you can do at this point.
Svatsky still has friends and family in Russia and in Ukraine. And he is in touch with them every day. But his family in Russia, they're trying to leave right now because they've been vocal critics of Putin and fear that their lives are in danger.
In Russia, basically, everyone who leaves has to go through interrogation by the FSB. They check your social media. They check that you are not an activist, that you are not posting anything online on social media against the regime, against the war, and then they might let you leave. You know, people are going to protests. There have been over 6,000 people already arrested in protests all over Russia. I mean, yes, it's not enough, but people are afraid for their lives because this is already a different kind of Russia. You know, one opposition leader, Boris Nemtsov, was killed in 2015. The other one had an assassination attempt and was jailed afterwards. I'm talking about Alexei Navalny, of course. And there is no opposition leadership to rally people and to get them out. Everybody's very confused. Everything's in disarray. People are scared. Of course, they're not being bombed yet, but it's very difficult psychologically for them.
Global sanctions and boycotts are a critical tool being used to pressure and isolate Putin. But at the same time, this moment has proved precarious for some Russian businesses in the U.S. Vandals broke windows at the Russia House restaurant in D.C. last week. And the famous Russian Tea Room in New York sat almost empty this week, despite posting on their website that they stand with Ukraine.
I understand. And I think that all government organizations and everyone that is receiving money from the Russian government now, and anyone that didn't publicly speak out who is outside Russia, should face the consequences. They need to face the music. Anyone who is inside Russia, people need to understand that if they don't speak out, it doesn't mean that they support Putin. It means that they fear for their lives. And it's a very real fear and it's a very real danger. But I will continue to support Ukraine. I'll continue to support Ukrainian artists no matter what happens until they win, until the bombing stops. And even afterwards, my priority number one at this point is to give visibility to Ukrainian artists, to give visibility to marginalized and oppressed Belarusian artists and Russian artists.
We turn now to Ekaterina Pravalova, who's professor of history at Princeton University. She specializes in 19th century imperial Russia. Thank you for joining us, Ekaterina.
Thank you.
You're from St. Petersburg. Tell us about your initial reaction when Putin invaded Ukraine last week.
Well, of course, it was such a shock because until the last minute, we thought it wouldn't happen. We thought it was only informational war. It was like bluffing. And it was shock. It was complete disbelief. It was pain. I'm still in shock. And we were all crying. We couldn't sleep. Like me, my husband, my friends here. I have a lot of Russian friends in the U.S. And we still cannot believe this is happening.
I'm wondering about your friends and family who are still in Russia and how they're feeling right now.
My parents are very old, but they are certainly, first of all, because nobody whom I know supports this war. And they are scared. They are lost. They feel in complete isolation because what Putin is doing and the government is doing, they are cutting off all independent media outlets. They have just shut down independent radio station, closed the Lost, and actually only independent TV station. And they are trying to limit Facebook, Twitter, everything. And they are in isolation. They don't know what is happening. I'm receiving a lot of calls and messages asking to explain to them, deliver information about the war, the state of affair in Ukraine. And of course, their feelings are very similar to mine. It's despair, it's helplessness, it's fear, and anger, because this is not only a war against Ukraine, this is the war against the Russian people as well. Of course, we cannot compare the level of suffering. The Ukrainian people are suffering physically, materially, and the Russians are suffering morally. And it's assault against the dignity of the Russian people, because Russians are against the war. And this is Putin's war. This is not Russia's war. So I think this is what they feel now.
Are the Russian people, when you talk about the assault on the dignity of a people who actually oppose this war, but their leader is nonetheless going forward, I'm wondering also if, in addition to the assault on dignity, whether or not the people of Russia are also beginning to feel the effects of these global sanctions.
Yeah, certainly. I talk to my parents a lot, and they try to go get withdraw cash from the bank accounts, little money that they saved, and it's impossible. The banks' accounts and the banks are empty, and of course they don't feel the same. They are kind of living simple lives. The sanctions have not affected them directly, with the exception of this little financial difficulties. But this is all coming, and I think that in a month or two, if this war continues, Russian economy will be just devastated, and of course everyone will feel it.
Obviously, you're a professor of a period well before the one that we are currently living in. I'm wondering if there's anything that your specialty in history teaches us, informs us about in this moment.
Well, I study empires, and empires were aggressive, right? They're fighting for lands, for people, for resources. They were also nationalistic. They were driven by nationalism. And it was so surprising to see the return to the same imperial rhetoric in Putin articles and speeches, and as if it's not the 21st century. This is so shocking. This is so archaic and so pre-modern, what is happening. Unbelievable. I also can say that I teach history, and I'm pretty sure that my students who know history of the Russian Empire and history of Ukraine, they were laughing at Putin's words when he was explaining that Ukraine is not an independent nation. This is just their, this is just a part of the Russian nation just run away. And this is so wrong. This is no unfair. It's not based on history. And everyone who knows history knows that this is wrong. So, of course, as a historian, what I can do, I can educate my students, I can educate the public, and just explain that what is happening has no justification in history, in history of nationalism, and history of Ukrainian nations or Russian nations.
And despite the ways that your expertise might be quite valuable in this moment, we do know that some scholars of Russian descent, some Russian scholars, have been disinvited from events or have had grants rejected. I'm wondering about, I both understand it and find it unfair and in some worrisome ways. And I'm wondering how you respond.
Yeah, I also find it unfair. I understand what is happening, right? Because I myself feel shame, although I do not associate myself with the state. No, Russia and the state and Putin, these are two different things. understand what is happening. At the same time, I think that academic institutions should make a difference between government and people. So when they disinvite Russian participants, they may not know that these people are already experiencing such tremendous pressure, continuing doing what they do, but also standing against the war. I can also say that now it's much more difficult, because when there was the Cold War, the Soviet Union, everything was clear, because every Soviet scientist and scholar worked at the state institution, right? So everyone was kind of belonged to the Soviet state. Now it's not the same. There are independent universities that are struggling to survive in this atmosphere. They're independent scholars and they do not belong to the state. So I want that academic institution in the West, in the US, to understand this is not the same situation as during the Cold War.
There have been some warnings that Putin may declare martial law and close down the border. I'm wondering if you and your family and friends, again, who are there, this sort of these relationships across the world, I'm wondering if you're concerned that this may turn into another Iron Curtain.
It may. I mean, it already exists in a certain way, because, you know, that the European Union has closed sky for Russian aircrafts, and essentially people are fleeing the country. I know many of my friends are trying to escape. They're going to Georgia, Armenia, Turkey. These are the last places they can go. At the same time, you know, with visas, with all consulates and embassies being closed, with the consequences of COVID, people don't have visas. They don't have just the possibility to leave. And this is so scary, because I'm thinking, what can I do? I have parents there. What if I'm not able to come as I usually do every summer to see them? So this is indeed scary and depressing, and everyone is worried.
Just one last question. I'm wondering, when you look at the history of the United States, our own experiences with discriminatory action when we find ourselves in international conflict, and I understand the U.S. is not currently at war with Russia. Nonetheless, clearly this is a heightening and deepening conflict. If we look back to the history of World War II and Japanese Americans' experience, if we look to the experience of so many Muslim Americans during the long wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, I'm wondering if you are worried about bias, potentially even acts of violence against Russians living here in the U.S.
I'm not, because, well, first of all, educated people, they're not prone to phobias. And as long as we try to continue educating, explaining what is going on, I hope this is not going to happen. Another thing is, this is exactly what Russian propaganda is using to launch the war. Putin persistently refers to Russophobia in the West, to create this, you know, atmosphere of fear inside Russia and justify their aggression. We should keep the standards of criticism very high. We should be logical and intelligent and educated, and never go down, not go low in this critique of Russians and the regimes, because this is only will help Putin to maintain this political atmosphere of distrust and fear between Russia and the West.
Ekaterina Pravalova, professor of history at Princeton University. Thank you for joining The Takeaway, Professor Pravalova.
Thank you.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.